Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Let it play a little longer than normal today as we celebrate Resurrection Sunday, a.k.a. Easter, Reef Pesquale in Portuguese. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports in Depth is a show of prayer. Opens our every show, and today, the greatest day on the Christian calendar. He has risen. A great line that the angels asked them, why do you look for the living where there is the dead? And we will open with a prayer. The legendary John Coltrane, whose greatest album was titled What Today Is All About, A Love Supreme. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day, and this day, that is the special of days that we celebrate the risen Christ. We thank you, Lord, for little things we so largely take for granted. And we thank you for being our God. We thank you for Christ that has given us the right, the tree of life and eternal life. Bless our family. Bless our friends. Forgive us for where we've come up short. My mother say, anything we've done wrong, cast in the sea of forgiveness that will never rise up against us at judgment day. Your will, your way, dear Lord, is first and foremost. Today is simply thank you. Thank you for Xavier. Thank you for the tree of life. Thank you for life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. In all languages. Obrigado. Gracias. In English. In the holy name of Jesus, we love and thank you for everything. Amen. And with that, we open our Resurrection Sunday Easter show. Maybe we won't do the whole 2 hours today, but we figured we'd do some sports. And those of you listening, we will let Mel Cosell welcome you into the Sports in Depth Nation. Rooney.
Well, thank you, Doc. Am I coming in clearly?
Loud and clear.
I'd like to say to you and our soon-to-be assembled panel, and of course our many, many, many fans of the Sports in Depth Nation, I want to wish you all a very happy and healthy Easter, of course, to you all and your families. I welcome you here to our show this Sunday, and it's going to be hard, Doc. We may actually have to have those 2 hours because I have some things, Doc, that I'm sure you're going to be very interested in. Among those, of course, our local basketball teams, and it's baseball season now. And, of course, last week was the biggest wrestling event of the year in WrestleMania 28.
You know, it's funny you talk about that. Sea Wings was there, but we may get him next week and due to the panel on assignment and out, so we just probably have a lot of time designated to you. Both Robinson Cano and Alex Rodriguez was there, and he was there with a former female wrestler, too. And Nate Baseball has joined us. The season's open, and you know it's April when the Yankees are 0-3 and the Mets are 3-0. I mean, that's what we were talking about earlier. But you know what happened? Huh? Yeah, it's early. But you know what happened, Nate? The thing that we talked about where, yeah, and I've talked so much about Doc Sandy Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Network, the show. It is our Resurrection Sunday special. And happy Easter and all the other according religious accolades as we celebrate the day of the risen Christ. I thought about some things that were really profound. I stood in church today and it hit me. Imagine if you had never existed. I mean, to never have existed, or to exist and then never exist again. You know, and you look at the sacrifice that was. I mean, the pastor today, Reverend Akins, talked about. You know, first of all, crucifixion was just the most severe, horrible, painful way one could be executed, and in the sense of how it was done with Christ. Actually, if you look at it from a Jewish standpoint, first of all, from a Jewish standpoint of view, 39 lashes was it. The Romans, it was insurmountable. Second of all, Jewish law allowed your shirt to be left on. Roman law, shirt off. Jewish law allowed you to lay down and lay on your stomach. Jewish law, stand erect, where the pain would be just insurmountable. And it just you look, and then you know Christ was the first person ever, only person, just nailed. Usually you would just tie, but he was nailed to the cross, and you just really can't comprehend, you know, somebody that kind of love. Greater love have no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friend. John 15:13. And you know, you look at that. And I thought of something that I remember I heard once on a religious show, and the pastor, the speaker said, you know, if you go down to the grave of all the great religious leaders, there's only one person that's not there. and I thought of something I heard recently. And you know, you can't comprehend. But nobody ever talks about Jesus Christ as, you know, when you say, hey, the late Dr. Martin Luther King and the late Joe DiMaggio, you know, and you know, the late President Kennedy. Nobody ever says the late Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, the living God, the Son of God, Son of Man. But nobody ever has used the term late, which just validates the living God. We'll talk tomorrow. Just amazing. You don't kind of comprehend what this day really means, you know. And I remember the pastor said something on Friday, you know, Jesus came into the world to die. He came into the world to die, which is everybody's modus operandi. And you just look at the horrible beating he took. I mean, the pastor said, you know, the Rodney King beating was nothing compared to the beating that Christ did. His face is unrecognizable. This, you know, all this. And you talk about love. I was thinking about the situation with you know, with Tiger Woods, and I mean, it depends. I mean, the Bible says love is forgiving, love is sharing, love is understanding. And I just thought, you know, yeah, no, nothing says he was wrong. He was wrong. But I said, you know, they had two kids. You know, it wasn't as if he had one or two steady girlfriends. I mean, I never understood why a guy like that is in a situation where, you're committing adultery and then you're paying for it at that, too. But, you know, I just thought, you know, it wasn't a situation as if he had one or two steady girlfriends. I mean, he was a horde that he was validated to a certain degree that, you know, he was promiscuous, but not with just one person. But, you know, Dr. King says, you have to understand, you know, people are cut from different cloths. Dr. King's great line is, you know, forgiveness is not an occasional act, but a permanent state of mind. And I remember Ali, as I listened last week to the interviews from Ireland, and this weekend I listened to, I go on YouTube to study my Portuguese lessons. I wound up listening to YouTube tapes, and it was the one that Priscilla Presley on the Oprah Winfrey show, and she talked about Michael, know, and how they really did love each other, and how she felt so good about protecting him, and she felt now kind of bad about, you know, as she looked back and saw, she said, how hindsight is 2020, how she may have taken the, I remember he called a couple of times, she said, because they still were in contact, he called a couple of times, but she became sort of indifferent and stuff like that, and she feels to some kind of way that, that maybe she could have helped save them, but, you know, it's just, I remember Ali said in the commentator said, well, you know, how do you feel about the people who basically orchestrated your demise from the ring for 3.5 years? And Ali said, you know, I don't have any ill feelings towards them. See, I would be just as bad as them. You know, said, but I understood where they were coming from. But he said, but I just thought they would understand me. And I think that's, you know, when you listen in a conversation, okay, I can hear the other person say, hey, I hear what you're saying, but you're coming at three. But at least you're hearing what they're saying. And you know, you look around today and just really can't, because, you know, Easter is actually a term used from a pagan holiday. Easter is really not the word used in the Christian calendar. This is Resurrection Sunday. But you just really can't comprehend what Jesus Christ went through. You know what I mean? And then if he doesn't come from the grave, if he doesn't defeat death, then, you know, there's no victory for none of us. But that great line, you know, grave, where's your victory? Death, where's your sting? Box County Sports Network on the Blake Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Network is the show. We go to baseball right away. It's AB Baseball and Dusty, you know, he's like I told Dusty earlier, you know, 0-3,
yeah,
Yankee 3-0, Mets is definitely April, Dusty.
it certainly is. It's like April Fool all over again.
You know, Dusty, but, Nate,
yeah.
and you know, I talked about never ever seeing a 300-game winner again. But
yeah,
I'm gonna shoot this at Nate.
Yeah.
Because you talked about it too, Dusty. You said, you know, look at Johan Santana. 5 innings. Guy hasn't pitched in maybe 80 years. He's got a 3-hit, 1-0 shutout. Why are you taking him out of the game after 5 innings? And this made me think, Nate, that there's a possibility. Yeah. It, I mean, 300 wins are out, but it's going to be hard for a guy to win 20 games. I mean, you look at the Yankees. I'm wondering what that bullpen's going to be like when there's no Mariano Rivera. Nate, it's going to be hard to win 20 nowadays.
Oh, definitely. I mean, even though, I mean, I think Verlander, you know, that record last year was an anomaly, of course. You know, it's going to be hard to win 20. And as we were discussing last week about the injuries and
right.
You know, I do think everybody is different. I think the focus on the injuries almost creates more injuries. And here's what I mean. If you took an MRI of my elbow or, you know, Doc's elbow or Dusty's elbow, I mean, I don't know your, you know, health situations, but if you took anybody's elbow, you know, and you took an MRI and you're constantly looking at it, you'd probably find problems. You know, so the more, you know, it's like when you go to the doctor. I hate going to the doctor because I'm always worried they're going to find something. It's like you go to the mechanic. So it's like in the old days, you know, I mean, they would, you know, just like get through this, you know, get through this. And so I think it helps most people mentally. So I do think the focus on injuries almost creates more injuries sometimes. I'm not saying all the time, but I think in a lot of these situations because.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe the pitcher may have a slight muscle irritation or something,
yeah.
and he tells the coach or the trainer, you know, this my arm hurts, zingo, out you go, MRI, x-rays, push, tear, when it really may not have been a nothing, quote-unquote, distraction or pain. It's just in the use of his arm. He's pitching 90, 100 miles an hour,
yeah.
So it gets a little irritated. But I'm looking
well,
at Santana. Yeah.
Ken, Dusty, happy Easter to you and Nat.
Thank you, sir.
Happy.
Thank you very much. You know, that's seriously, you know, with all things told, the human arm just was immense.
Yeah.
Getting that direction under that type of duress. I mean, if you really want to look at it, you have some type of orthopedic type of person. you know, looking at the knee and the, you know, the way the joint. So the human arm really wasn't meant to do that stuff. But you got guys going 90, 95, 100 miles an hour, and the arm really wasn't meant over a number of years.
Absolutely.
Right.
Harold Weston said this 3 or 4 shows ago, and he was right on target. The body was never made to be stretched and pulled and bent and twisted and thrown up against the wall and hop, skip, jump. I mean, the body was made for just, what do we call, normal use. But
yeah.
I supported what he said with a little codicil, if you're going to use that word, that you're healthier in doing the exercises and building your body and maintaining a diet, and you are really healthier than the everyday nerd who does nothing but read books and walk, you know, because the body atrophies.
Right.
Okay? And this is basically, but what I'm saying is that when you're in baseball and you've been pitching since T-ball, and this is your chosen position in baseball, the arm becomes conditioned or acclimated to what you're doing, and as you're growing older and stronger, the arm does go.
You know, Dustin,
80,
you come up with a great point. You come up with a great point. You're so old school, which is just really such an education itself. I mean, Nolan Ryan has the same mindset you have.
There
go
you
out
go.
There and pitch. Throw the ball.
I was just going to mention him. Go ahead, Doc.
I remember Tom Seaver. You know, George Thomas Seaver. It's amazing. I thought about it the other day. You know, Seaver's middle name is Thomas. As Nolan Ryan's middle name is Nolan. That's not his first name. And these two guys are 1-2 in the most received votes in percentage of the Hall of Fame. And I was thinking one day, I said, wow, you know, that would be busy cool. You know, you go 7 innings and you bring in a good relief pitcher. As Mets always had good relief pitchers. Chuck McGraw was one of the outstanding guys. And Luis Arroyo, who should have got half of the Cy Young that year that Whitey won the 25 games. But I'm not a batting cage. I said, wow. I said, you know, if you were around today, man, you could win 500 games. And he looked at me, and I never forget, he said, bullshit. They said, bullshit. He said, you got to go every 4 days, and you got to go at least 7 innings every 4 days.
Right.
Yeah. Now, here's a stat. Go ahead,
Dustin. Yeah. The thing has changed the climate of the game and the babysitting of the game, because can we go back further? You see, I'm old
Dave,
school.
Dustin, do not go back to little David, okay?
But
they didn't play baseball then.
Oh, my God. What was his name?
Satchel Paige?
Was it McLean?
Yeah.
I forgot the pitcher's name. McLean? Danny McLean?
Yeah, Danny McLean.
Yeah.
He won, what was it, 25 games in a season? What was and
No.
You know.
Oh, he's the last 30-game winner.
Right, and he went the full nine.
Yeah.
You see, he went the full nine. So
what
you
about,
can imagine.
I told you the line that Catfish told me when we were talking with the Cat. What a great guy, Cat. And Catfish said, you know, the reason why they had the guys in the bullpen, they didn't want them in the game in the first place.
Exactly. And the funny thing about it, and this is how Mariano Rivera wound up the biggest saver in baseball history,
yeah.
Because he was a starter, he couldn't get past the third round. I mean, third round, Jesus Christ.
Hey, Rooney, there you go again. Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
You ring a bell, he come out swinging.
I'm sorry, he couldn't get past the third inning. Oh, you got me this time. He couldn't get past the third inning. So they were smart enough.
Rooney wasn't meant for that. And, you know, when he was talking about the, you know, the whiplash type of effects it had, he was mentioning it, Doc, and the fact that professional wrestling, my sport, if you will, is a perfect example. Everybody in the business has a bad back just from the what they do. Everybody there has some type of chronic elbow or chronic knee. You know, just from the, you know, the slams and shots that
you take.
The injuries. You know, in doing that. Everybody has a bad back in that business. Everybody has an elbow, everybody has a knee. Seeing that the stars on the road some upwards of 320 times a year, I mean, you know, it's only natural that you're going to develop, you know,
Nobody's saying ignore the pain or ignore the injury because of the fact that, you see, you wind up now with the modern-day medical savior of the pitcher's arm with the Tommy John surgery. you know, nerds from here and the cartilage from here, and you're back in the major leagues, you know. But what I'm saying to you is that here, Santana, back from a year-long hiatus because of his bad arm and little by little practicing and spring training, he has these guys on a shutout, striking out these dudes, I mean, grounders and this, that, and the other, 5 innings. Was that a medical decision, or was that to give the reliefs extra work?
Dusty. Wow, now baseball, this is a great point, Dusty,
yeah,
is bringing in now, because, you know, it's like in the old NBA, I remember, you know, the old day, Walt Frazier told me, you know, Red Holzman didn't have assistant coach. You know, he had him. He had Frankie Bastow, who was the road manager, and
exactly,
that was it. Now you got about 5 assistant coaches. Now, how much is because you're paying the guys, but how much can this be a factor that now, you know, the manager is not saying, well, I'll let him go longer. The staff will, hey, he's pitching 102. I mean, how much do you think in the injection of what Dusty said is now is the medical staff who's never swung at a curveball or played the outfield?
Yeah, absolutely.
Doc, if I come in here,
you come
in. I wanted to tell you, Doc, that you're negating with someone that was by Holzman's side for about 30 years. And I want to know if this name rings a bell to you. Do you remember the trainer, Danny Whelan?
Oh, Danny Whelan. No, there you go. Okay, great point. Frankie Bastow, and you're right. Danny was the guy. And not only that, Rooney, Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Depth is the show, Happy Resurrection Sunday, happies. You know, you bring a tremendous point, and that's why Mel Cosell is on. And you're right. And not only that, as we get back to Nate, you know, Danny was the whole medical staff.
The whole medical staff, exactly.
You know, I mean, Danny Whelan, who's always coming, my man, was the whole medical staff. You're right. You had Red, you had Danny, you know, Frankie Bastow, you know, a tremendous point. And I'm just saying now, as you look into, you know, it's amazing, Kane. It kind of slapped you in the face here, too. I wanted a double shot, double play at you, Nate. Kane's contract, and how much did the medical staff have an input? As I looked, I said, well, Kane, it shows you how they're paying such big. The left hand, Kane is the highest paid right hand pitcher ever. All these guys making money have been southpaw pitchers, Nate, baseball.
Yeah. Well, I've got a couple thoughts. First, with the relief pitcher stuff, I mean, going back to Dusty, I mean, I think I'm in agreement, you know, if I understand correctly. I mean, you have a guy like Rivera, or, I mean, who has great stats. I mean, if you look at ERA and that stuff, but pitches, what, like an average of 60 or 70 innings or something like that a year, and
right,
the amount of money a relief pitcher gets per inning is just astronomical. I mean, you know, especially if you are – and I mean, and you can, if you're left-handed, you know, you don't even have to be that great for teams to, you know, want to get you to get the lefty on lefty matchup, which I always questioned a little bit, just because I'd rather have a good pitcher out there, even if he's right-handed, you know, over, you know, mediocre or below average left-hand pitcher.
Basically, you bring up a good. Dusty Baker used to tell me that. He said, you know what? Why am I bringing in a left-handed pitcher?
Yeah.
Pitch to Dusty. Dusty's hitting .475 against this guy.
Yeah.
He's hitting .475 against this guy.
Yeah.
And Rooney, he's hitting .172. So why am I not bringing in Rooney, who's got him out the last 15 years, you know, as a pro? Dusty Baker said, he said, I go with the best guy, not so much what's all called, like you say, maybe baseball, the book.
Yeah, the book, conventional wisdom is not always that great. I mean, in football, baseball, they always say they're going with the conventional wisdom, or they're going with the percentages, but I'm often thinking that doesn't sound like the percentages to me, or that doesn't sound like.
Not only that, Nate, the guys have gotten way too carried away with this lefty right.
Yeah.
So sometimes guys have a Nate Dusty. Sometimes guys, as far as I'm concerned, have a tendency to get a little too cute. Have to have the double switch.
Guys
tend to be a little bit too cute sometimes.
You know, Rooney, you bring a point. The guy that seems to have a great for the book and seen a lot of ways it went, one of the best matches, basically. My friend Buck Showalter, I remember one game, man, he took out his most devastating hitter, his best hitter. He took out Matt Williams in a double switch-up going by the book. But once again, you know, I'm like with the clubhouse stuff. I've never heard the book 7 Yankees 2.
Exactly. And you know, it's a good scouting report for the individual, whether it's the manager or the coach or the ball players. Carlos Delgado, who with the Mets and retired, he always kept the book on how the pitchers were pitching to their team, to his teammates, and how they pitched to another teammate. And he always wrote down, he would sit in the dugout after his turn at bat or whatever, he would charting down everything that the pitchers would be doing or what type of pitch he was. You know, sure, that's good. He has a scouting report on the pitcher. But, man, when you go up there in front of that pitcher is going to throw you everything that you cannot hit. You cannot stay there. Hold umpire, pause for a minute. Let me go back to my book and see what you're going to
Carlos,
pitch me.
Hey, Carlos, bring that book here, baby.
Yeah, right. Hey, trainer, bring the book over here so I can read what this guy's going to do with the third pitch or how he's going to pitch me a curve or an off-speed fastball or some crap. No.
Let me tell you something about the book, son.
That's just for your information so you can sit down after the game and say, well, this is how he pitched this, that, and the other. But it's not going to do you any good. It's the same thing, you know, I laugh because sports is a funny, beautiful, lovable world. And it's the same thing. You go to training camp, spend 8 weeks sparring and this, that, and the other, prepared for John Doe, and you watch his films. When you go into the freaking ring, John Doe ain't fighting you the same way that you saw the films, man. John Doe is fighting you a different way. And say, oh, my God, well, I'm not prepared for this. Well, that's your problem.
That's why you got to have this single-mindedness of play because guys can switch up off on you. Let me give you a quick example. I remember being in the Yankee Stadium, I think late 70s or something like that. And I'm sitting in the Yankee Stadium or the great off at George's, the ball at the big ball yard in the South Bronx. And in comes one of my personal favorites, one of the most intimidating relievers, as far as I'm concerned, of all time, Goose Gossett. Guy struck the ninth out in 9 inches. The radar gun never went under 100 miles an hour. When the ball hit the catcher's mitt, it sounded like a shotgun blast. So take the book up there with Goose bearing down next to 100 miles an hour. Take the book to that.
I remember the story of Satchel Paige, first time he pitched to Willie Mays. Willie Mays hit a double. Leroy Satchel Paige went out to second base, looked at Willie Mays and said, the next time you come up, you're going to see three pitches and you're going to sit down. Okay? Turned to the shortstop and said, when he comes back up, let me know. All right? Mm. And, you know, there was that great line, Empire called a ball on a pitch that I think Walter Johnson had thrown. It was dark outside, and Empire said, did you see that pitch? He said, no, but it sounded low. You know what I mean?
Sounded low.
Hey, let me speak to that, Doc. I remember the great Muhammad Ali said he was fighting Joe Frazier in the Thriller of the Little. And he said he's in the late rounds, and, you know, it was an absolute, of course, a bona fide classic war. And he says, out of no place, Joe Frazier hits him with a big time right hand. He said, "I said, Joe, you're not supposed to be able to do that." And he
that's exactly,
you know,
what I'm saying.
You do it the right.
Yeah, exactly. You're supposed to be preparing for everything and then look out for this. All of a sudden, slam, bam. You mentioned Goose Gossett, and this is a funny story. I don't know if you guys remember. Goose Gossett, I think, was with the Padres, the San Diego Padres. I think Steve Garvey was first base. And they were, who the heck they were playing? I think it was Detroit. Somebody correct me, you know. And Dick Williams comes out, and he's telling Goose Gossett, no, I think you better walk this guy. Walk this guy. The guy, Goose guy says, no. I'm going to strike him out. I got my best ball. You remember that story? And he throws him his best knockout knockout. I mean, you can't even touch this ball. The dude hits a freaking home run and wins the game. And he's looking at Dick Williams, looking at Gossage, and Gossage looking at Dick Williams, and Dick Williams saying, "Damn it, I should have stood my ground and let him walk the freaking guy because this guy was dangerous, man." And this is what I'm saying about.
How dangerous Goose was on the other end of that throwing the ball. And I'm sure you all remember it way back in the day. Goose is just throwing BBs as usual.
Oh, this guy's an animal, man.
I believe Ron Say in the helmet.
Oh, yeah. Ron Say was out for a long time, yeah.
Yeah. 50,000 plus was stone silent. We were hoping that it wasn't the demise of Ron, but he got it square in the head. Thank God for protected helmets. I don't know how they ever played without them.
Exactly. You know, it's funny you said it. I thought because it was a long time that they played without the helmets. And what they first did, they really didn't have the helmets. That you put a little hard piece inside your cap, and then
they gave the fighters. Oh God, they gave the ball players a shot at either wearing the helmet or not wearing the helmet. And then Reggie never wore a helmet with the flaps. He always wore. Like you look like the catcher's helmet.
Yeah, the cap type helmet, right?
The cap type helmet. He never wanted to wear the flaps or anything like that. But
why?
They came in because
why? He didn't want the
flaps. Well, because Reggie was Reggie, and he said, "Hey, I don't need that crap. I don't need those flaps covering my face. I don't need all that crap."
Listen, I'm not gonna be up here that long anyway.
In fact, I'm not gonna be here that long anyway. Bam, home run. Okay, sit down. but basically, getting back to this whole scouting reports and look, you got a book on this guy and got a book on that, and then now since the major leagues, since the season started this week, all I've heard by Michael Kay and Lou Piniella now is an announcer, and of course Ron Darling, Keith Hernandez, and all those big blow dudes who know everything. Let me see. What was the pitch count now? I mean, he's up to 55 pitches in the third inning already. He's already thrown 85. I never heard that garbage conversation, man, a few years ago, man.
These were guys who didn't play in that era anyway. I mean, but you know what, Dusty? It you know what it comes down to? It's who's paying them. It's who's paying them now. I mean, because Darling didn't have no pitch count when he was pitching. Hernandez
Nobody
didn't go by that. I mean, he didn't have no pitch count. I mean, but it's, you got to look at, the climate that you're in, the people that are paying them. It's in the great words of Harold Wesson, we hope we get along with Sad. Doc Stanley, Sports Net for the Blake, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Net for the show. They're here. Nate B. Baseball, the Zusty Lois, and Mel Cosell. We're going to talk so much about the WWE. We want to get back to you, Nate. You said you had some points too about the medical staff outlook.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a couple things, but we were talking about the Kane contract, medical stuff too. It's like with all these injuries to pitchers, even if they don't have a history of injury. I mean, I'm just amazed that somebody with a this goes to show you that. I mean, the focus on ERA and, all this stuff, WHIP. And, I mean, I think all this stuff's important. Maybe in the past wins and losses, years ago that was seen as the big step. But it's like this guy, he's a really good pitcher, but he's actually lost a little more games than he's won in his career. And it's amazing.
Nate, and you heard it here first. On Sports Net, Nate B. But here's a guy got the highest contract in the baseball who has a losing record. 2 years ago, we had a pitcher who won the Cy Young who won one more game than he lost. Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've always thought that one loss is, I mean, obviously, if you have a lot of run support, you're gonna have a better run loss record. Like, look at all the pitchers, earlier in the decade, that went to the Yankees, and of course their one last record, they won more games than maybe they would have.
McClain, the year that McClain won 30 games, I think Detroit averaged 5-6 runs a game for him.
Yeah, absolutely. But I feel like a great pitcher, should still have win at least a couple more games than they lose, just by their greatness. You know, I mean, it's not like, I mean, and of course the the San Francisco Giants have had poor lineups, but they haven't had a minor league lineup. You know what I mean? They
right.
You know, they've had poor major league run production, but they still, you know, had the World Series and everything. So it's just, I mean, and Joey Votto's contract,
phenomenal.
I'm just amazed. And you know, the Reds are going, doing some negotiation, you know, soon about a new TV deal. So they want to have a good team to, you know, make that
put on TV.
Get a good TV deal. Yeah, but it's like, Joey, I mean, how did Prince Fielder sort of struggle to get the contract he wanted when I thought he may have been the best, you know, free agent out there? I mean, as far as signing a long contract, because he's young, healthy, you know, and all
right.
these things. And then Joey Votto, who had two more years left on his contract, gets this huge contract from the Reds. I was blown away by that contract.
Well, what about this guy, Nice, who pitched yesterday? Nice, he just got, what is it, over a 5-year, 58 mil, I think it was. Somebody correct me of the money figures.
Oh, from the Mets.
Excuse me?
Yeah, for the
guy from the Mets.
Yeah, $25 million over 5 years. Yeah,
over five. I said, since when does this guy merit, with all respect to athletes?
Here's a thought, gang. And one thing I know, this definitely helps the managers because I mean, you know, if you're paying a guy $80 million, then the guy that's managing has to make a little something. But now, how much of this is racial?
That's a good question, Doc, because if I just told my kid this afternoon, and forgive me for interjecting, because sometimes I use the broad brush of racism or bias. I want to use bias.
Yeah.
You look at the Mets today, they're all white now. They got rid of the color guys. If you look at the Mets, there's no more predominance or equal share of people of color. Did you see today's lineup?
Listen, I told Ken Griffey Jr. 20 years ago. I said, you know, there's less black players in baseball today than there was 20 years before that. And George Willis, our good friend, did an article. Look at the old Yankees. You had Nettles at third. That was it. Santana was at shortstop. Willie Randolph was second. Chris Chambers at first base. You had Munson behind the plate. Some guys, he was there. Cliff Johnson was there. Forget the outfield. Reggie in right. Winfield in left. Okay. And you had Mickey Rivers in center field. When Reggie left, Winnie went to right. Roy White went to left. I mean, how does Kane merge this kind of money with a losing record? And all these left-handed, they're making this astronomical. I mean, it's the greatest job in sports. Every fifth day you pitch, and you go about a half an hour, maybe. You know what I mean? If you want to mess them up, you keep throwing pitches, they foul off. I mean, but you got to look at this, and I never forget Bill White. I mean, you just can't look at the astronomical money that's being made by guys who are just not that good. But where are the African Americans? I mean,
shocked when I read that Nice got this contract. That's since when? What did this guy? Last year,
I mean,
he was 6-11, I think it was. I'm saying,
I mean, Fielder was Nate. Tremendous point. I mean, here's a guy, bona fide home run hitter, youngest man hit 51 home runs, over 50 home runs a year, and bingo, his contract is leaped over now. Dusty?
Yeah. Yeah. Right, and you know, because of the fact, they have to work their expertise and their talent in the factory level before anybody turns around and recognizes that these guys are bona fide key ball players, and they finally some team, maybe Detroit was desperate. Let's put it that way. Desperate to get a quality first baseman with a lot of pop in his glove. I mean, in his bat. Yesterday he proved it. Him and Cabrera, both of them hit two home runs apiece. Now, is this the beginning of a Prince Fielder dynasty, the home run king, and leading Detroit to the World Series? Nobody knows. But he's beginning to show that the money that he was paid, was $207 million, may have been justified, but my question is Nice, who was a nothing pitcher last year, now all of a sudden, boom, he's got this extension. There's money, and you couldn't pay Jose Reyes the money that he deserved, and he had a defect and go to Miami?
Duffy, can I throw this in? He won the batting title. Okay,
yes,
he won the batting title.
He won the batting title because he himself played the game that other games were being played. He took himself out of the freaking game so he could preserve that freaking average. Remember, like I told you, when there was a battle for the batting title between Winfield and Donnie Don Baseball, understand?
Yeah.
Donnie got his hits and all that, brought off his average.
Here's a better one, Dusty. Here's a better one, and you've been talking too long. I want you to call back about 15 minutes. You got too much air time to me today. But, Dusty, here's
okay,
a better
I'll
one.
I'll call you tomorrow.
No, hey, make it next week. Dusty, here's a better one, really. I remember when Ricky Henderson was leading the American League in hitting, and George Brett caught fire and passed him, and then sat down. George said he talked it over with Bo Jackson and somebody else, and they said he should sit down. Okay?
To preserve that average, and that's what
yeah.
they did with Donnie Baseball, and Dave Winfield lost it.
Well, with Donnie, here's a better. I remember Donnie goes into Boston, and Wade Boggs is leading him, and Wade Boggs sits down.
Yep.
Wade Boggs sits down. I mean, the thing with Winfield and Donnie, you know, which I want to talk to Dave Winfield. You know, usually I call Dave, college him and Eddie Murray, and Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Network, the show. And so I called Dave today, and he answers the phone. And I said, Dave, I said, you know, I'm so used to the answer machine that, you know, I'm stunned that you picked up the phone. And we laughed and talked for a while. He'll be in town June 19th. We're going to try to get him on the show down the line. The only man ever in the history of professional sports in this country drafted by
San Diego.
NBA.
Oh, yes.
The Atlanta Hawks. Yes. The ABA, the Utah Stars. The NFL, which I believe the Minnesota Vikings. And Major League Baseball. And AFL and NFL. Just a great human being. Great player. One of only three players in the history of baseball to win the Gold Glove in both leagues. And the thing
right.
here, you know, I'm looking at, you know, you're right. I mean, where are, you know, the African Americans and I mean, the Latins are being inundated, and a lot of times, you know, because of the dark complexion, the mindset is that they're African Americans, but they're not. But you look at, you know, as Nate Baseball, you know, what validated Voodoo getting this tremendous contract? I mean, and you're saying, do they want to make sure that, you know, an African American is not the highest paid player in baseball? It's just, you know, it's crazy. I mean,
well,
you know, what justified him getting that kind of money?
Well, I think there's,
exactly.
like, if you go to the Reyes contract, I mean, I think you can, I mean, this is sort of speculation, but, I mean, I don't
right.
think it's that far speculation. Look at, I look at it as sort of a complicated racial issue in this way. You know, I'll give two examples and how it can go two ways. And one is, Roberto Clemente, you know, said, you know, he called himself a double N-word because how he was treated because he was black, you know, and a Spanish speaker.
And Hispanic, right.
But
right.
on the flip side, Langston Hughes, when sometimes he'd go down to Mexico or when he was going down south on trains, you know, there's discussion where he would slick his hair back, pretend that he was Mexican, you know, a dark-skinned Mexican, and was treated better. So I think when you look
yeah.
at the Reyes contract, what you can say is the Mets that one time did have a lot of Latin players, you know, they, and had Puerto Rican players and Latin players are not sort of, I don't know if they have any plan, but my, you know, so there may be some discrimination in some places. And then on the flip side, you know, let's say we'll call that like what, you know, how Roberto Clemente put it. But on the flip side, you know, you have Anaheim or whatever they're called, Los Angeles Angels or whatever.
Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah. Miami especially, who are marketing, Miami especially, who is, you know, trying to be the Latin team, and also sort of
right.
the Angels with bringing in Pujols and some of their, you know, marketing has
yeah.
sort of suggested that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can, I kind of see it as, you know, in some markets, maybe that can actually be a positive, you know,
mm-hmm.
but in other markets, it can actually be seen as a negative. So I think it might depend where you're at. And I think, you know, again, the specific African-American thing, like,
right.
you know, where maybe the Miami Marlins are marketing themselves as the Latino team or something
tremendous
like that.
Tremendous point, Nate. Yeah. Tremendous point.
market themselves as black teams.
Tremendous point, which is validated.
Yeah.
I mean, because you look, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. I remember Frank Bannister, my first mentor, the late Dr. Frank Bannister, talked about how a lot of people from the South, mm-hmm. you know, as integration was coming, it would leave the South because they could come North and actually, you know, administer and interject their racist theories more so than in the South. And it's funny you talk about how you're going South, there's more interjection, there's more understanding, and you go West where there's more integration and more understanding, and you look, and a point just hit me, Nate, that, yeah. as you brought that up. Doc Stanley Sports Network for the Blake Radio Rainbow, so the channel Sports Network for the show, WWF results will be bringing soon by Mel Cassell. Because if you look, it's amazing. As you look, it was the Yankees in 1955 and the mm-hmm. Boston Red Sox in 1959 who were the last two teams in the American League to get black players.
Yeah.
It is a good, yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
You know, it's only in America, man, and it's just as sad and touching in the words of Howard Weston. Doc Stanley Sports up on the Blake with the Rainbow Soul Tim.
Good, Woody. Tried to fight and tried to hold out as long as possible, but the tide was a turn, and even they had to finally get with the program. I'm sorry to interrupt the ID.
No, there's no problem. Hey, you're the room, you're the Cosell. And you're right. I mean, it's but you know what? Even with that, if you talk about Roberto Clemente, as you know, Nate is working at it as his thesis. You know, Clemente was in the Dodger organization. You know, yeah. and if you look back at that situation, who would have been more apropos? Who would have been more suited? Who would have been more perfect to come to the Dodgers, the first great Hispanic player? Okay, probably the greatest Hispanic player, and the right fielder who would supplant and replace Carl Furillo. But because of the quota system, there was a quota system. You know, you can't have that many of them on one team. You know what I mean? You look at 1951 and you're amazed at the all-black outfield, the first time ever in the World Series, Hank Thompson, which says a lot about baseball. It's only 4 years after Jackie Robinson. Hank Thompson in lefty and Carpo, legendary Willie Mays in center field, and Monty Irvin in right. And you know, you look back, I mean, one of the reasons why Will supposedly came up kind of late, because, you know, not only was Pee Wee at shortstop, but, you know, you just couldn't. The Dodgers were inundated with black players. Jackie wins the rookie of the year in 47. Newcomb wins in the 49. Now you got Campy that he wins the MVP 51, 53, 55. Jackie won in 49. Newcomb wins in 56. You know, you know, it ain't about winning. I remember Gary Ward told me, you know, the Yankees are concerned about winning with a certain type of player. They want a certain type of player to win, which means they want white players. And you look at Clemente because, you know, the Dodgers tried to hide Clemente, okay? And they did some really obscene things. They would put him in the lineup, and then as he's coming, batting in the third, then they would pull him out because they thought scouts were going to see him. Or they would tell him, stay in the dugout or stay in the clubhouse. They would pull him out of the game. They wouldn't put him in the game. And the Pirate organization came to him and said, hey, we know who he is, we know where he is, and we're going to take him, okay? So that's that, you know, and you think about Clemente, the big thing, here was a guy, you know, instead of saluting this guy for going 3-for-5, who said he's got a bad back, it doesn't feel well, you're questioning his integrity. Why would he lie and say he doesn't feel good? And you know what? I wouldn't care if he didn't feel good. He just went 3-for-5 against Koufax.
He just
went 2-for-4 against Seva. He went 1-for-3 against Marichal, but it's a 3-run. So I wouldn't care if he's lying. He's hitting the ball. He's won 3 batting titles. At 1 year, Clemente was a 367. The closest guy to him was 40 points behind. So why are you questioning his integrity? But you're not questioning, and you know, in those days in baseball, alcohol was what everybody did. And you know, a lot of guys couldn't play because they were drunk, a.k.a. the great Mick. So a lot of times the Mick couldn't play, but, you know, you're questioning Clemente. And the thing that I heard about, you know, Clemente just couldn't understand when he came to the States. He couldn't understand how black people were persecuted, ostracized, simply because they were black. Who is that Sea Wings just joining us?
Yeah.
Who just joined us? Hello. Who? Sea Wings.
I thought you said Sea Wings was on the line.
No, we got another call to join us. I thought it might have been Sea Wings.
No, but that's basically.
Who was the pitcher for the Houston Astros?
J.R. Richards told him he wasn't feeling well.
He
was lying until he almost died from that heart attack out there on the mound.
Exactly.
He
almost had a stroke.
That's what they had said, that he was lazy, that he was shaking it.
Faking it, right.
And it turned out that the man had a very, very serious illness, as you know, we all know.
Exactly. That's how they come up with treating people of color or stigmatizing them with certain profiles. You know, lazy, shiftless, they don't want to play ball, and it's always an excuse. But the other guys were able to play and get the days off, or if you don't feel well, you're taken care of. But getting back to the racial issue, Latinos, and not only the Miami Marlins, but you got to go through football. The Miami Dolphins are the same way. Florida has become little Havana, and now it's becoming little Puerto Rico, and now it's becoming little United Nations Latinos,
yeah.
And they want to get that market,
mm-hmm.
You know. So personalities like the Stephans and the Mark Anthony's and Lopez, and these people have bought shares into Miami Dolphins,
yeah.
And it's a tribute to the owner to try to draw in by having those personalities own shares, and bring in their own the celebrity crowd into watching the games, you know, and these are high rollers. So basically, they're playing the race game to improve the image and the popularity of the team and get more people going to those turnstiles, man. You know, sure, it's a game. Sure, you may feel annoyed. But still, in all, that's the name of the game.
I remember Dusty went to the Hall of Fame, and they inducted one of the baseball writers, and he said he brought his grandson to the Hall of Fame,
yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
He showed him around. He said, "Hey," he said, "that's Jackie Robinson's locker." He said, "You know," mm-hmm. He said, "you know, one time they weren't any black baseball players in baseball," and his grandson said, "What?" He said, "How can that be?" He said, "They're the best players," and you know, it shows how this stuff is something that, you know, kids are not concerned. Even Willie Mays talked about in his book how as kids they would choose up sides, and the cops would come and once again segregate them. They would be integrated. He's no. Okay, all you white kids over here, all you black kids over there. They would segregate them. They would segregate. If they saw black and white kids playing together, not against each other, they would segregate them. And they would drive off, and they would leave, and the kids would wait till they got out of sight. And they would go back to the way they was playing. And my mother had a great line. My mother said, you know, when you go down to the carousel and the kids hop on the horse, a white kid doesn't say, I don't want to ride this black hoppy horse. And a black kid doesn't say, I don't want. You know, it's a horse. But
it's
a horse is a horse,
and a ride is a ride.
Yeah. But you look at the structure. I mean, Bobby Valentine. You mean to tell me there was no capable Hispanic or black guy who never got a chance, who couldn't have got a chance to? You keep bringing back guys that you fired. I mean,
yeah.
I remember Hal McCray, and we talked about it, and we said, you know, okay. And what if we do though? If I give Dusty a team, I'm going to give Dusty the new expansion team that's not good, or I'm going to give you the bad Padre team or the bad Philly team. You know, so you really don't have it. Now, if you give the expansion team to a white manager, he gets all the time in the world. You know, the team is going
to
be all. I remember Buck Showalter, the team wasn't even put together, and he was already the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks. They had no team, but Buck Showalter had the job. Hal McCray talked about, you know, I want to manage, but you know, because you cannot let the opportunity go, because it's the opportunity to open the door for others.
Absolutely.
But you know, you want a chance, and and that's what he said. You know, give me an outstanding, give me a good team. Casey Stengel, point case. He's a guy before he came to the Yankees, who won five World Series in a row. Casey Stengel was just another manager. He come to the Yankees, becomes a great manager, leave
great
the Yankees,
manager.
And come to the Mets, and what is he? But he's always Casey. And
exactly.
Just look at, you know, baseball is always a barometer. And you said it last week, Dusty, the American game. And it's a barometer. Remember when we had the show about Jeremy Lin and Chief Petty Officer Antonio Newendam said, you know, well, why does this have to be about race? Because, unfortunately, in America, it's always about race. And you see, I mean, how does Billy Martin berate Reginald Martinez Jack, who couldn't carry his jock?
I mean, I'd be remiss if I do not mention this, you know, at this time. So let me say that I want to offer my sincere condolences on the loss of two media giants. Condolences to the families of the great Gil Noble and Mike Wallace.
And you know what you're doing, Rooney? You're telling it like it is. Gil Noble. Dusty, now you tell me about Gil Noble. Give us that insight. He was anchorman for a while, right?
I'm a media man from way back. I mean, I'm never successful or good, but
Dusty,
I was always
Dusty, you at ringside calling blow by blow for Cain and Abel, baby. He said he's going to kill him. You said he's going to kill him.
Okay, guilty as charged. But I met Gil Noble a long time when I was doing some work with Channel 7. The man was a terrific gentleman. I mean, he welcomed me and talked to me like if I was already an on-staff reporter, man. I mean, I said, my God, this is Gil Noble. And he was an anchor man for Channel 7. And when he started his Like It Is, he was getting some flack because Like It Is was basically to highlight the black experience, man. So at the risk, having his tenure and all his time built up, it was well-known already. He risked, you know, took a risk and built his Like It Is and left Channel 7. And he was a tremendous jazz piano player. I mean, I don't know if people know that. The man played, piano just as good as Teddy Wilson or Earl Garner. I mean, this guy was great. He's a great person. Anyway, and he ran this Like It Is, and my God, it was a tremendous award-winning every Sunday afternoon show, nonstop, you know. And when he got sick, and Laurie Stokes took over for a while, but the fact of the matter is that he had been sick for some time, and it was a stroke that left him incapacitated, unconscious, and he never recovered from that. And unfortunately, maybe this is what, you know, why he passed away at 80 years of age, you know. But Gil Noble was a great man, and you gotta give kudos to the Mike Wallaces, man, because this guy was 93 yesterday when he passed away, but he had been sick for a long time. And, you know, like we say philosophically, it comes in threes. Now, which other media person is going to pass away?
Right now, this is not a media show. This is, everybody on the staff is now, we're not media people. You know what I mean? We're gonna hold off for a while. We're not going to be talking to those media people. Let's take a break.
Scared?
We'll be right, gang. Doc Stanley, Sports Dev with the Blake, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Dev for the show. Happy Resurrection Sunday. Don't nobody move.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports in Depth for the show. It is our Sunday special, Resurrection Sunday. And we, hello? Hold on, Doc. Yeah, Dusty, you hear something?
Yeah. Could I just go back to the equal opportunity of people of color getting management, and I frown very deeply on what happened with Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints. And I go this way, and I go in this direction. Mm-hmm. For 14 years, you have the Indianapolis Colts under Peyton Manning and partly with Tony Dungy. Championship team year in and year out, Super Bowls and the whole nine yards. But the understudy to Mr. Dungy was a man of color. And when Dungy left, he continued on that tradition of leading the team to championships. They didn't get to the Super. But
no, they did. Remember,
they were there. They were competitive.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning gets injured. He loses that whole year. Now Indianapolis Colts hits a skid, and they're 0-2 or something for whatever. Eventually, of course, it was an expected thing. The man gets fired. Okay? Here's an experienced man who was in a championship team for 14 years. You mean to tell me that Goodell, the commissioner, cannot use his influence when Sean Payton is looking for a replacement? He goes to his own homeboy, Bill Parcells, and picks him, and nobody objects and says, well, let me give this guy a shot to run my team at least for a year to see how he can do it. The man is still unemployed. The other day I saw Donovan McNabb. Nobody would pick him up. Thank God he has the smarts, the education, and the articulation. He's now an anchor man with ESPN NFL. And he made his pro debut the other day, and he was great and articulate. But that's NFL's loss because of a great quarterback.
And, you know, and you made another point, too, Dusty, that I want to control up with
Mark
you.
Sanchez.
We'll jump with you on, too. And I've said this, too. You look at the broadcast booth, and the people of color there are former players. But where are the people of color who are doing the Dick Enberg job, who are doing the Marv Albert job, who are doing the Bob Costas job? There are no African-American Bob Costas.
No.
No, Dick Enberg.
You're not a person who's a former player. You're not going to get that gig.
That's what I'm talking about.
So that's
you know what I mean?
Right. If you're not a former player, you're not going to get that gig.
Yeah. I mean, for every James Brown, there's about 50 guys of the other complexion is out of the connection. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Depth for the show. We are at this time, too, saluting and remembering both Gil Noble and Mike Wallace,
yeah. And these are guys that did the greatness. But, you know, I always do the cockeye reversal. I'm saying, man, where was the Mike Wallace of color all these years? And I'm sorry to play that bag, but that's the way I am.
Well, I mean, you you can always count them on one hand. You know, Ed Bradley. I mean, you look at that revolving door, and Ed Bradley was the lone guy there. I mean, you look at how long you only had, you know, you had one black coach of the Yankees. That was Willie Randolph, and you brought in Chris Chambliss, and here's this guy who wins the World Series as the batting coach of the World Champion Yankees, and he loses his job. I mean, Willie Randolph is the only coach I've ever known, who's in the midst of a winning streak and got fired on the road.
Ms. Fred, that you should mention that, and this is what's so significant. Actually, I wanted to kind of touch on some of the local basketball teams as well as the WrestleMania result. But I wanted to say this, like, that is why I wanted to kind of get the WrestleMania thing in. What is so significant about the WrestleMania result is that the pay-per-view card, which is fully loaded, but that the main event was carried by a black man, Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson, which signifies a sort of coming of age in pro wrestling. The fact that they'll put their biggest pay-per-view show, which is, you know, their yearly pay-per-view, the fact that they would have the main event in their hands between The Rock Johnson and John Cena is a significant boost to the black performers in, you know, in that arena. It is. For the very simple reason that they usually do about a million buys, about a million pay-per-view at their WrestleMania. I believe their record is 1,250,000 2000, which I believe was Shawn Michaels and Mark Calloway, a.k.a. Undertaker. I believe for this pay-per-view, WWE was trying to get somewhere upwards of $500,000, which would have been just an absolutely significant rise in a pay-per-view sales. That's off the chart for professional wrestling. They were looking for $1.5 million, and with The Rock as the anchor for this, they did $1.9 million, which is unheard of in pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
So this suggests, and rightfully so, for the African American performers, that yes, not only can you have a pay-per-view main event at your 50th show of the year WrestleMania, but breaking all box office records.
I've got something to say about that.
Go ahead,
if I can. Yeah. Well, it makes me just think about this. You know, I think it all comes down to is that racism or segregation or whatever is what's the term? It's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. Segregation is bad for and racism. I mean, but if we go back to segregation, it's bad for the overall health of the economy. The the interstate commerce laws that's one huge thing that the Civil Rights Act, laws were passed under, is that it's bad for interstate commerce. So I think when, whether it's in baseball, teams marketing themselves, for Latinos or what we're just talking now with WrestleMania, I think this is good. This just shows, I think, how if you were to exclude these things, it's bad for those, sports. And it's in the best interest of different sports to be the least racist as possible, just to allow the best people, no matter, who they are, to come to, the forefront, because that's good for business. Racism is bad for business, but there's other reasons. I mean, for the overall health. I mean, and I think you can look at the Civil Rights Act and the interstate commerce, connection to that, in my opinion.
Well, to piggyback on what you're saying, you hit the nail on the head, with the biggest sledgehammer that you could ever find. Because of the fact that last week I mentioned, but forgive me, I forgot to say something which is key in terms of the anger that I still have when the African team was not allowed to play Little League.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week I said, oh, my God, I forgot this. One of the greatest things that I enjoy of Major League Baseball, you don't have to agree, nobody has to agree, is the 2 or 3 months before the league starts the season, the World Baseball Council, or World Baseball Concert, in other words, where all the major league ball players representing their own country, it's almost like a professional baseball league. Mariano Rivera represents Panama. Carlos Beltran, Puerto Rico. They all wear the country's uniforms.
Robinson Cano, Dominican Republic.
Dominican Republic, Big Papi, and Jose Reyes, Manny Ramirez, and all them guys. And stupid A-Rod did not go with the Dominican team. He stayed with the American team. That's why I dislike him. Now, that's my own personal opinion.
Listen, you're going to get our vote. Don't be knocking A-Rod, okay? You're running politically. Go ahead.
But I forgot to tell you guys that there was a team from Africa, a professional baseball team from Africa in the World Baseball Classic. World Baseball Classic, that's what they call it. These guys may not have been the greatest ball players. I think in a tournament of about 10 or 12 games that against all the other teams, and one of the teams that they beat was the Dominican Republic, they only won 5 games, and they were eliminated early. But these guys knew the offense, defense, the pitching, the catching, the first base. Why can't the major leagues set up a franchise, a minor league franchise in Africa, and bring those Africans out here to play ball on an equal terms?
Back up, Dusty. You answered the question. They're African. We understand. Ali talked about that. Not all white people are racist, but the few. Major League Baseball, that's the last thing they want now. I got a gentleman on here who brought a point up. He said, Major League Baseball is to the point now they're even drafting people of a certain color. I mean, they're not drafting dark complexion African Americans anymore. You know, you've got to be a certain complexion to get the connection. So, I mean, the African team is, you know, it's not what they want. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, the thing that made the National League so dominant in the All-Star games is because the National League realized that the black player could be a star. And you went through a whole period there. Jackie won the Rookie of the Year in 47.
Yeah.
Okay. Then Newcomb got it in 49. Then you had that whole 7 years in a row of Mays, Gilliam, Newcomb, Aaron, Campanella. You know, they saw that the African American player could be a great baseball player. But you know, the problem that you had, you looked at the American League. They stood fast. They stood fast.
But
and then eventually, because the All-Star game, you remember how, I mean, the National League dominated the All-Star game. And why?
Because
they had interjected Frank Robinson and Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Vada Pinson, you know what I mean? And the American League stood on the fact, well, you know, we keep winning the World Series, you know?
Are you going to tell me that because they're African from the Sudan and Nigeria and Ghana and all that, there is I hate to use this word, but there is a justification for not drafting these guys in our World Baseball Classic, there were guys from the Netherlands playing Major League. I forgot the guys' names.
Andrew Jones is from Suriname.
Yeah,
but the point is, Andrew Jones can say, you know, you can, I mean, it's a great thing, but for them, because Andrew Jones is not American, so he's not American black. We ain't got that problem. He's not from Africa. He's not American black. So he's from Suriname.
A
lot of people, you know, they don't know, you know, the complexion of the people in Suriname. I mean, Europe is not concerned with color, but, you know, but our America is. So, you know, go ahead.
So are you saying to me that if they draft Nkrumah, Buno, Okolo, Tono, his whole name is going to be bigger than his freaking T-shirt is wrong?
They
call him Jones.
Here comes O. O's coming to the plate. That will work if it's advantageous to bring in African players from Africa, as opposed to having African American players. You know, I mean, the one thing that makes the Latin player so accessible and so ready, available, and digestive to the American baseball system is because when the season's over, he goes back to DR. He goes back to Venezuela. He goes back to Panama. He goes back to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
He goes back to the country. So we have to worry about it. Now, that's the thing that Rube Foster thought that would be advantageous, to having a team that America would take a black team before they would take a black player, because they wouldn't have to coexist with the whole team. They just have to play against the team, and they're done. If you take one play, he's got to live with you. He's got to be around you. And if it was advantageous to have African players that you could take from Africa, and they're going to go back to Africa. But the great line that Buck Showalter, Buck O'Neill said, you know, the guy that makes $5 million a year starts to live with a guy that makes $5 million a year. So the problem that you have here is, you know, you have the African-American. I mean, listen, it was Curry Flood, the great Curry Flood, who brought the reserve system. Told Augie Bush, you know, how come the black players and the white? This is 1967.
Are you going to tell me that these African ball players making all this money are not going to go home and build up a home and live with their among their people as he like getting into boxing?
I'm saying that's perfect. They will. But if they were good enough. If they were good enough, but they're not good enough. But if they were good enough, it'd be perfect, because now, you know, the guy, okay, coming to the plate, batting third, Ogie Wakizuki from Nigeria. Ground ball to short, fly ball deep right field, back against the fence, Umsaga Mangi from Kenya. Hey, they'd love that, because now we got black players. They're not part of the American system. They're not part
of
the American system. You know, Ken Griffey Jr. has to live someplace. Willie Mays had to live someplace. You know, but the point
is,
if you could have these guys come, and that's the great thing about the Latin players. They're going to come here and go home. They're going to go home because it's home, but they can take $100,000. I mean, imagine the astronomical kind of money these guys signed, $1 million contract, what that is back in Venezuela.
This is exactly what I'm saying, Doc, that they take, that they can set up franchises like La Sorda set up in Mexico with Fernando Valenzuela.
The problem is that the African players are not that good.
Started with DR,
they're
with
not
the
that good, Dusty. I mean, the point you brought, there's no doubt. Yeah, listen, if it comes a time that they become that good, maybe they will, but right now the thing that they have going for them is they're not that good. If they become advantageous, okay, to the situation, they'll bring them in. I mean, they don't need them now. It's work. I mean, you're darn near back to 1945, 1943.
Yes, but what you send a cadre of scouts and teachers and instructors like they did. Like they did in Santo Domingo, like they did in the third world nation, Latino countries. I mean, these guys are imitating the American ball players, but then they say, hey, there's
money.
Yeah,
but you know what, Dusty? You know the problem is? The African that's going to come here is going to want to stay here. He's not going to want to go back to Kenya. He's not going to go back to Nairobi. He's not going to go back to South Africa under apartheid. He's going to come here and stay here. That's the biggest problem. Doc Stanley, Sports Devil, the Blake, the Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Devil Show. Real quickly, we're talking about pitchers, and I had to be my greatest, my favorite right-hand pitcher, and we were talking about pitchers and all. See, that's the big difference, Dusty. He's going to bring a suitcase to stay. Nah, we ain't having that. You know what I mean? We're not having that. Juan Marichal, after throwing a one-hitter in his 1960 Major League debut with the San Francisco Giants, Marichal went on to become the winning pitcher of the decade. His 191 wins in the 60s, well, check this out, 27 more than St. Louis Cardinal Bob Gibson, 33 more than Los Angeles Dodger pitcher ace Don Drysdale, 54 more than Dodger Sandy Koufax. The Holy Trinity accumulated 5 Cy Young Awards in that period. But Marichal, a Dominican native, would never get one in his 16-year career, in which he had a 243-142 record, a 289 ERA, 2,303 strikeouts, and 9 All-Star selections. He won more than 20 games 6 years out of 7 during the 60s, including 3 seasons of 25 or more victories. Now, we're talking about great pitchers. That was a great pitcher, and those kind of guys are gone. But, Dusty, that's the big thing here. And I think Mel Cosell will dovetail me, you know, the African that's coming here is not going to go back home. He's going to see America, that big thing about the Statue of Liberty, you know, give me your tired deport. Hey, he's going to come here, Rooney, to stay.
Hey, Doc, am I going to be able to touch on any other sports before we run out of time here? Because I really want to get into a quick basketball, a quick football. I don't know if I'm
going to be able to Rooney, I want you to answer this question, and then if we have time, we will let you do your tightrope number. We'll dovetail on this, and then what we're going to do, after you answer this question, the floor is yours.
All right, what's your question?
Rooney, you mean you wouldn't even listen, Rooney? Oh, my God.
I want to know the exact question.
No. What I'm saying is the thing here, and I think Nate agreed too, is you know, the thing about, well, they're not that good enough anyway, but if they were that good, the big problem was that the African from Africa is not going to come here and go back home. He's not going back to apartheid. He's not going back to non-running water. He's not going back to hunt. He's going to want to stay here.
The fact of the matter is that guys are going to want to come here and live the American way of life, okay? They're going to want to come here and live the same way that any of the athletes, you know, here in America are living. They're going to see the creature comforts, if you will, the cars, the clothes, the nice houses, just the ability to be able to live much differently than, I guess, they had been willing before. So in answer to your question, as far as I'm concerned, sure, guys are going to want to come here, Doc. And I'm not saying never go back to their home country, it's just they're going to want to play here and live here.
Mm. Okay, and now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you the Mel Cosell portion of Sports and Tap. Hold on. Let me play the music for you. Hold on. Let me find the music for him now. Let's bring him on. We just can't bring him on. We need a little music for him. So let's find some music for him. As we bring in the one and only, hold it, little commercial. Ladies and gentlemen, the next voice you hear after this commercial will be Mel
Rooney Cosell.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
And now, the WWF portion of the show with a little basketball thrown in. Mel Cosell.
A pleasure, and thanks to a good doctor in battle. No, Doc, and I really wanted to actually kind of start. I wanted to do the WrestleMania thing, but I want to say this, because I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say it. I think Mike Woodson deserves to be brought back based on the way he has been playing, and quite frankly, something that I didn't know if I'd ever see. Mike actually had them playing defense. And Ernie, who'd have thought that? He actually has the New York Knicks not only hustling, but playing defense in earnest. For that alone, I think Mike would be the best back, but at least he has them playing hard, he has them playing defense. They look deep, and they're tenacious, for a change. The tenacious Knicks. I didn't even know if you can use those two words in the same Nation and Knicks in the same sentence, but they're playing hard for Mike. They're giving a decent effort for Mike, and I think he deserves that on that basis alone, Doc, to be brought back again next year and at least have another full year to see what he can do. I mean, he has a bunch of his main players and the guard whose name I escaped. Starting guard who's hurt, of course, out for the year. And
who, Campbell?
By the way, they said, and I think I heard this earlier, that Tyson Chandler may be playing with some broken wrist or severely sprained wrist. Either way,
yeah. He has an injury.
Yeah. By the way, I have to tell you, Gus, and panel, Doc, Nate, for my money, of course, Carmelo's, the superstar and the big name. But for my money, as far as anchoring the defense or what have you, I would give Tyson Chandler my MVP. I really would. I think
one thing when you bet money, when you don't worry about it, it's always Dusty's money. So bet as much as you want. No problem.
Well, I'm trying to change the culture of the team in regard to playing a hard defense, rebounding, which when was that last time you ever heard the Knicks, a Knicks seriously involved in that rebounding basketball? Playing decent, and hustling. I think him winning that title of last year just kind of gives him a different aura that when he speaks, listen. It's always different, Don, and I know this about professional sports, but the guy's sense of listening ears are a little bit perkier when a guy can walk around and give advice and they can see a ring on his finger, Because that means he's not just blowing smoke. But, he has kind of something to kind of back up what he's talking about. It's one thing to be a really good, a really great player if you haven't won anything. But somehow, somebody who's walking and you can see that bright, shiny ring on their table, on their finger, has a different aura.
Well, I think a ring has its place. It can be motivation, but I think one should always be motivated. I mean, the greatest forward ever played the game never won a ring. That's Elgin Baylor. When you talk about forwards in the history of NBA, the greatest forward that ever played only never won a ring. The greatest guard, you guys, not loading a little of Oscar, but Jordan, but Oscar Robertson, the greatest all-around player ever played this game. He only has one ring. You look at the great Julius Erving, he got two ABA rings, but only one NBA ring. It can be a motivating tool, and then it depends who's wearing the ring. Bill Russell, Oscar Robertson, Michael Jordan, Julius Erving, Larry Bird wearing the ring. Okay, that's one thing. Casey Jones, Kevin Kabersky, a guy that sat on the bench could be wearing the ring too. Woodson is an outstanding coach, but no stretch of the imagination was Woodson an elite player. Having a ring means he's a member of the team.
About the old timers, not the motivation. I'm talking more about the new Peter.
Well, it's a great point, but I mean, I think one should be motivated. The problem with today's players, Rooney, and we want to get you to WF too. No, the problem with today's players is so many of them are not well coached, Dusty, because they come from a different era. You know, when we came up, a guard was a guard. How could you be a guard you couldn't dribble to have a jump shot? How could you? I mean, there's no such thing as a power forward. There's no such thing as a point guard.
Because guys don't play for 4 years anymore, Doc.
Well, it's not about 4 years, Rooney. It's about coaching. It's about I'm the coach now, and I got to win. So, Rooney, all I want you to do is rebound. Dusty, you shoot jump shots. Nate, be baseball. You play defense. I talked to some guys. You know, it's because you were taught these things at a young age in junior high school and high school. You were taught how to play the game fundamentally from the beginning. Guys are not being taught how to play the game fundamentally. And it's not just basketball. It's across the board. I mean, we just talked about the first half hour of the show about pitching. I mean, you know, when you went out there to pitch, you know, nobody said, hey, Dusty, you know, go as long as you can, and then we're going to bring Doc in. No, that's just your game. It's your game, Dusty.
Exactly.
You got to win, baby.
When you're starting out in sports, and I'm using that as a broad base, you're starting out in sports, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, a sport which is considered a team concept.
Mm.
Every young kid going to those teams learns and acclimates himself to every position that's played in that sport.
What a point, Dusty. You know, you're playing in the street, and Nate has to go eat. Dusty goes to third base. Nate comes back. Rooney's got to go eat. Dusty goes to first base. Doc's got to go eat. Dusty, you got to pitch.
Exactly.
And basketball-wise, you're right, too, Dusty. You could do the same thing.
You learn the rudiments of the entire – you know, I'm going to – a little piece of history, which is – I don't talk too much about it. But I was a little league manager from T-ball all the way to junior pony, high school, college freshman.
You're the guy that wouldn't play my nephew, huh?
That's right. I beat you every time. No. But the fact of the matter is, I ran it this way. Kid comes to me and says, I'm a pitcher. Okay, you're the pitcher. All right. But I want you to learn and play and be proficient in a second position, or you cannot play for me. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, well, I'm the pitcher. If I don't pitch, I ain't playing. I said, oh, okay. There's five other teams over there. What I did is I developed kids to play and be knowledgeable about every position in that game. I mean, and I even gave them lessons. And this sounds funny. Lessons. What's the length of the pitcher's mound? What's the width of the first baseman? Or the length from home to first base? So they can eat and absorb what they are involved in.
And you know what you did to Dusty?
You made him understand
as a catcher, that even though he may drop that ball, how tough it is to catch.
Exactly.
What
I'm telling you is that these guys, they're not taught well. They don't know. Well, then it's the person who has them under his wing's fault, because there is a two-part situation here. The kid who doesn't want to play a forward because I am a jumper.
I'm a guard.
And I don't want to play first base because I'm really a second baseman. Well, then, you know, you don't want to play? Goodbye, Charlie. Go,
and you know what, Dusty? You bring a point, too. I remember I always wanted to play second base because I love Jackie Robinson. But I was an outstanding first baseman, and the coach of the team, the teacher, Mr. Ross, said, Mel, you know, we need you at first base. Yeah, Mel,
exactly.
I know you can play second base. I know
right.
you can say, but you know what? I need Randy at second base, because you're the best thing we got for first base, and it makes the team stronger, because if I put you at second base, there's no doubt you're going to do the job or better than Randy, but I got nobody to play first base. So what you're alluding to, you were an outstanding coach. You taught guys how to play, but you also taught morals. You taught conviction.
Discipline.
John McEnroe talked about, you know, he never wanted to play individual sport. He liked the concept of a team, you know, the camaraderie of a team. I mean, you know, it's a big difference sitting in the clubhouse with a whole bunch of baseball players or sitting in the dressing room with just your trainer, your manager, you know, you got to go fight. It's a big difference. We want to get back to Rooney for a second. Rooney, we want you to spell out all you got for this WWF. We've been chopping at the bit. Give us a story. What happened?
I was wondering if I can remember it now, Doc. I mean, now that you finally got to me, I'm wondering if I can recall it. Seriously speaking.
Yeah.
Seriously, though.
Well, I'll just slam you one time on the mat. I'll come back to you. A little body slam. I'll bring you back.
Body slam. It was a loaded card from us. Very much loaded. As I said, they were hoping to do 1-5. They wound up going upwards of 1-9. They had upwards of 78,000 over in Miami. Very, very, very successful, both financially and aesthetically, both very, very, very stacked cards from top to bottom. Fans had their money for. As I said, the main event featured the current. And you know what's so funny about it, Doc, is, and I know that Dusty knows about this. So Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson isn't what you would call a good guy. He actually is a bit of a heel, but he's so cool, quote unquote, that the fans like him. And the current good guy, John Cena, who kind of saves the girl all the time, has been getting booed at the house show. And the reason is that this kind of reflects on our society is, I guess, that you can only save the lovely heroine so many times before the fans get tired. It was very interesting to note that this guy's been breaking his back for the better part of, I don't know, 8-10 years. He's a good guy, you know. Eat your vitamins, say your prayers, sort of like the Hulk Hogan type of thing. You know, save the girl. By the way, seriously speaking, he, I believe, has, John Cena, that is, has had more save the wishes fulfilled, I think, than any other professional athlete. So, you know, in that sense, I know that he's actually part of that record, had achieved, but he's still more, you know, save the wishes from the Save the Wish Foundation than I believe any other professional athlete. However, as far as the actual fan base is concerned, I guess it shows that, hey, you can only save the girl so many times before the fans get sticky. And so he's been getting, you know, kind of booed out the house show. So I predict a character change for John Cena, and I believe he will go back to what he was originally, which was a heel. I think they're ready to turn his character. I think that they want to go back. Now, he's been resisting it. As I said, he's very, very proud of the make-a-wish things and what have you. So I think he has been resisting that change. But from what I understand, WWE creative was more or less going to insist on that change. Okay, now for the now this also is the co-main event, even though it wasn't for the WWE Championship or the World Championship. But Mark Callis, a.k.a. The Undertaker, had a 20-year reign of never losing at WrestleMania. To the fans, it's known as the streak. And so the storyline to this was the one of the current favorites and son-in-law of the man, Triple H, would he be able to stop the streak and break the up-to-then 19-year reign of never losing at WrestleMania? They made a big deal out of it. It was basically the whole main event, the streak. Tremendous work on behalf of Triple H and Undertaker. Those two just have a natural chemistry that flows when they work together. Just a natural chemistry that's just life for the fans. And I was wrong in this prediction. I was sure that after 19 years of undefeated WrestleMania string, that it was time to have the Undertaker move on into the sunset after loss. And lo and behold, he wins again. All 6'10" and 299 pounds, beats Triple H in a match of the year type of match, and the streak lives on. Whether they are going to find someone to face them and threaten the streak again next year, I'm not sure. But 20 straight years, one had the ball. A couple of other incidents. Well, one of the world wrestling, probably the world heavyweight champion, Daniel Bryan, lost his title in a record 18 seconds due to a type of a mule kick to the head. 18 seconds down, out. He's done new world wide wrestling federation champion Sheamus McDonald, who, by the way, was a former bodyguard. I'm trying to think of the name now. For Jon Bon Jovi. All 6'6", 270 pounds of Sheamus. Sheamus McDonald, former bodyguard for Jon Bon Jovi. So
wow.
World heavyweight champion. On the other front, the other champion, the always loquacious CM Punk, defeated Chris Jericho for the World Wrestling Entertainment WWE Championship. They actually have two champions, but like a WBC and a WBA, even though they're both of the same federation, they actually have two champions. And so CM Punk returning his title, defeating the always interesting Chris Jericho, who, by the way, Doc, it would be interesting to know his father was a enforcer for the New York Rangers back in the day. Chris Jericho and his dad. Also, you had some other incidental, matches going along. The whole thing basically was a tremendous success, and I have to tell you that, as I said, both aesthetically and financially, and I have to tell you that I'm at a loss as to what they are going to do to top it. Over the years, their WrestleManias have featured Liberace, Muhammad Ali, Mr. T, Mike Tyson, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm just trying to say, Aretha Franklin. I mean, they've just had a huge, by the way, Mike Tyson indeed was inducted into their civilian Hall of Fame the day before WrestleMania. Mike Tyson was down. Hall of Fame. So all in all, Doc, I just wanted to say that it was a treat for the fans. They ain't earned their money for this. All the guys always go all out at WrestleMania. Huge financial success. The Rock again now is going to be free to plug his upcoming movie, G.I. Joe, which is probably at a theater near you relatively soon. And by the way, the next week and their next show will be, and you'll love to hear this, I'm featuring the new Three Stooges. So I guess a good time will be had by all. I just want to thank you for being able to kind of get some of this out. I know the wrestling fans of the show will be, they've probably already seen it, but, I'm just trying to give my take on it. Surprise Undertaker's streak goes on. Surprise that World Heavyweight Champion loses in 18 seconds. The Rock beats John Cena clean. No interference. No hits in the head with chairs. Clean pin. New champ. Clean pin in the main event. So that's basically what's going on, Doc. If you have any questions, anybody on the panel, but a very, very interesting show. They're out there, so that's great.
Well, what's next for The Rock now that he beat John Cena?
He's promoting his new movie, G.I. Joe.
Oh, but is he coming back to challenge anybody else?
Yeah, he will. He will. I don't know what he got for that. I'm thinking somewhere up to because I know he gets up for the $5 million per film, and I know that. Vince McMahon personally, along with World Wrestling Entertainment creative, asked him to headline this WrestleMania card against John Cena, but they really didn't have a main event that they thought they could hype to the extent where, they do this. They were hoping for $1,500,000 pay-per-view buy. They would consider that a tremendous commercial and financial success, and he did $1,900,000. So the same
guy. Did Sing Wings join us? You hear Sing Wings?
Yes, I'm here, Doc.
Okay, well, here we go. Well, you were there.
Sing Wings.
Sing Wings, come on in. Live from, you were down there at the affair. Rooney, I guess he's going to tag team you. You were there. Talk about your site. Talk about your event.
I have to hear the Sing Wings report, Doc. I got to get, welcome back, see? And happy Easter.
Thank you, gentlemen. And a happy Easter to the panel, to our listeners out there. I must say that this WrestleMania was probably the best that I've seen in about 10 or 12 years.
Wow.
Out of the WrestleManias from the beginning. But it had a the matches were great. I would say 97% of the WrestleMania event was phenomenal. I mean, like Rooney said, the change of the World Heavyweight Championship in 16 seconds, I think that it was quicker than that. I mean, it seemed like it was quicker than when King Kong Bundy pinned SD Jones. They said, what is it, in like 9 seconds? But it went so quickly. And I would say the Undertaker versus Triple H was the best match. By far, the best steel cage Hell in a Cell match, the most grueling. I mean, The Undertaker took a beating. Normally, he would walk off and turn to the crowd, but you can actually see he took a beating. I mean, his back was bleeding. He must have got hit by that chair from Triple H about 20 times. And, that it was incredible.
Legalized mayhem. Wow. That was amazing. There was another guy. I remember, I think I mentioned it last week, and I'm curious, maybe you might know where he's at or whether he retired. You had The Undertaker. Then the manager was Paul Bearer. Remember the play on words with the coffin, Paul Bearer. Then there was another guy that was supposed to be his twin. His twin brother, that was another type of zombie or something. I don't know what the word was, but there was two of them. It wasn't just The Undertaker. It was another guy that I remember, just
Shane.
As big as.
Shane.
It was who? Who was
Shane.
That?
Shane. K-A-N-E-K. All 6 foot, supposedly 7 feet. I think about 6'9", 6'10".
Yeah.
160 pounds.
And it was just as solid as The Undertaker, and they were like, they hardly spoke, but these guys were awesome, man, with their manager, Paul.
Randy Orton, tell us about it, Steve. How was the Randy Orton Kane match?
Oh, that was fantastic. It was fantastic, but I can't help but not take my attention away from The Undertaker Triple H match. I mean, just to get Shawn Michaels involved, and, you know, they both laid their hands upon him. I knew he would fight back, which made the Hell in a Cell cage even more interesting. And to go back, I mean, The Undertaker, it takes you back in time of who he fought. His first match at WrestleMania was against one of the biggest legends in the WWF, all wrestling itself, is Jimmy Superfly Snuka. I mean, to go 20 WrestleManias and be able to pull that off in some of the matches that he's had is phenomenal on the part of The Undertaker. I mean, over 20 years. It's incredible.
See, I would compare that to the Cal Ripken streak of, like, consecutive games.
Right. Right. I mean, the beating he took, I mean, I've never seen anything like that before in my life. And to come out of that, walk out of it, I mean, that even surpassed his match with Mankind. Having slammed him through the steel cage, having thrown him off the top of the cage, I mean, it surpassed those two matches. It was just unbelievable. And The Rock and John Cena, it was very entertaining. You could feel the bad blood between the two. But that was also a great match as well for The Rock to win at home His home, you know, his home state was phenomenal. Just to quickly touch base on that, the highlight of that weekend, I think, was the Hall of Fame show, Hall of Fame ceremony, which I also attended to see, you know, Edge give his speech, Mike Tyson, you know, our first wrestler in WWE history to be elected in the Hall of Fame twice, the Nature Boy. I mean, it's, you know, seeing the old-time wrestlers and managers of the past, Jimmy Hart, the Iron Sheik. I mean, it took me back to the days when I used to sleep all day just to stay up and watch Saturday night's main event on WNBC. You know, and it just brings back that time in my childhood, you know.
And see, you know, I was trying to tell Doc and the other, you know, other panel members, you know, that, you know, this isn't all entertainment, that the punishment that these guys take, you know, the real reason, C. Wings, for the retirement of Edge.
Right. Right. I mean,
his
broken neck. I mean, you know. Yeah, he had the broken neck.
He broke a bone in that early in his career. They did what they could to fix it and kind of get him back in the ring. Somehow he had lasted like another 6 or 8 years. But his time was kind of just about up. And then finally, he wrapped it up, you know, with Mr. Morales.
Yeah, I mean, just the brutality that they take. I mean, people... you know, obviously it's choreographed, but you can't fully choreograph real life. I mean, these guys are, you can hit them hitting that mat. That mat is not as soft.
We've got. Well, I mean, we've got a good little amount of time left. We can always do a little mic on lights up because we got to talk about the Justin Guard Sports and Depth Hall of Fame. I mean, it's funny you talk about it because I have some WF. I've met some WF artists. Fred McMahon, Triple X, I've met Captain Albano, and I have a couple other autographed pictures here at Trust and Guard Sports and Death Hall of Fame, Artifacts Entertainment. I want to say hello to my good friend in Brazil. Let me find a little Brazilian man. You know, we have a listener of the Sports and Death Nation, and she uses the show to stay abreast of what we're doing from sports-wise, but she also uses the show as an avenue to help her in learning English. And my good friend Rosie, right out of, she's right between I gotta learn the city. She's right between São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. And she is an avid listener, a lover of all the panel. And, you know, the other week when we had the Brazilian show, and the guy talked about Capoeira, and she was saying, hey, he knew what he was talking about, and she loved the show, as she did the. Capoeira, as you did the also, we had the special about November of last year. And Rosie and her sister, that great show, the photo and her family, happy Feliz Pascueira. I hope I'm saying it right, but that'd be Domingo de Pascueira, Domingo Sunday of Easter. And I want to thank her for her. Her dedication to her faithfulness to the show. Also want to say something to my good friend Deixo Cotamasso, Junior International Promoter. Say hello to him and his boys, my sobrinos, and my right-hand man and devout friend, Steve Glazer in Fortaleza, and also Sylvia, and all my other friends down there in Fortaleza, everybody at Marina Parque, AJ, and Viviani and Junior and Trabajada, all my family and friends over there. My good friend Tom from out on the West Coast. But just wanted to top it up with this whole thing started with just saying hi to Rosie, who is, Rosie will listen to a show, pause it, and come back and listen to the rest of the show the next day. And she helped me with my Portuguese. So, eu muito feliz and muito gusto, voz de mim muito bom, amiga, beijo, muito, muito obrigado. Mi bela amiga, mi amor. And just want to take that time to thank her. And once again, also thank the gentleman who was on our show, and we'll be doing some more Brazil stuff down the way. I was doing something the other day. The first country to make a Christmas stamp, 1898, Canada made the first Christmas stamp. Brazil was the third country to have a Christmas stamp. Austria was the second, and Brazil was the third country. To 1939, they had the first ever Christmas stamp. America didn't get a Christmas stamp until 1962. They made 385,000 of them, thinking that would be enough. They wind up selling over a billion. First ever Christmas stamp. Fox Daddy Sports Up on the Blake. We know what Rainbow Silver Channel Sports Up in the show. We've been giving you some of everything. We talk to baseball as we not losing sight of what the day is about. The greatest day on the calendar for Christians. He has risen. Why do you look for the living where there is the dead? And, you know, the story I learned today was, you know, Doubting Thomas. I don't think people understand where that term came from. That term came from when Christ appeared to his disciples and Thomas wasn't there. And they told Thomas, they said, we have seen the Master. He has risen. He has risen. And Thomas said, I will not believe he has risen until I have put my fingers through his hands and put my fingers through his side. And 8 days later, because the disciples at the time were fearful, they were hidden in a room with the doors locked, and Christ appeared. There was nothing God can't do. And 8 days later, Christ appeared to him again. And Thomas came over, and his name in Hebrew too is twin, as he was a twin. And he put his hands through Christ's hands, and he put his hand through the side, and he bowed, my Lord, my God, my Lord. And Christ said, you know, you have believed by seeing me. Blessed are those, I make it wrong, who believe who have not seen me. We cannot comprehend, those of us who have been saved by the grace of God, what today means. I mean, Christmas is a great time. He comes to the world, but that great line that the pastor said the other day, Christ came into the world to die. And you understand the defeat of death. Death, where is thy victory? Grave. No, death, where is thy sting? Grave, where is thy victory? You just can't comprehend what today means. Easter is actually a pagan holiday, as Christmas is really not the birth of Christ. Once again, a holiday adapted, and the celebration of Christ is during December 25th. But for all due intents and purposes, Christ was probably born about the middle or the 1st of October. As you remember, it was at the time when the shepherds were in the field. So you have to understand that. And they were not in the field in December. But today, Resurrection Sunday, just a profound, it is, you cannot, those of us who have been saved by the grace, cannot comprehend what today is meant, to defeat death, to defeat the impossible. I mean, everybody was headed to a one-way street. And today, Resurrection Sunday, you can't understand the beating that he took, the sacrifice. I mean, you can't comprehend. I mean, to come from the best part of town to make a sacrifice is one thing. To come from heaven. You don't know about love until you understand the love of God and his son Jesus and the pride God has in his son. This is my beloved, whom I am well pleased. I mean, the sacrifice to God, his son, you know, if Christ was written, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? God has to turn his back on sin. But you just can't comprehend. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake, the Limerick Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Depth for the show. All praise to the Master. Sea Wings, you know, I like the NFL commissioner. I like what he did in New Orleans. Some new information was supposedly submitted, and he said, you know, he'll look at it. But he made a move. Is not going to take any hanky panky. I got 31 other football teams. Your thoughts, C-Wings? You are a resident football guru.
I'm 100% behind the commissioner, just for the fact of he took a hard stance, and the reason that he took the stance was for the safety of the players. It had some PR in there, but everything points to the safety of the players. It's been a hot topic about the safety of the players and the after effects into retirement that these guys suffer just from playing the game. And now you add on top of that some guys that are specifically going out to hurt somebody. I mean, forget about it, that NFL, any given play is a career ender or possibly a life ender. We look at Dennis Byrd. I mean, he was paralyzed. Thank God later he was, you know, learned how to walk again.
Mm-hmm.
You had the, I think it was the Rutgers player that was injured from the chest down. So the mere brutality of playing in the NFL.
Oh, you said the big hit by Jack Tatum against Stingley.
And that
was a preseason game, if I'm correct.
And then you have to protect these guys.
Yeah, Nick Bonacardi Jr. in college.
Mm-hmm. The names and the numbers are numerous, and I heard that he's going after the players. This is not the end. He's going after the guys who administered, the guys who interjected these things. This is not the end, and it's amazing. I wonder how this would pan out had this been Tony Dungy, had this been Matt Snell. Shell. I mean, I'm thinking about. I wonder what it would have been like had this been an African American. I mean, I don't think this guy would have done differently. But I mean, for something like this, I mean, would a lifetime ban be out of line, C-Wings?
I can't say for sure would he have given an African American coach a lifetime ban.
Not a lifetime ban. I'm trying to say as far as the coach of New Orleans. I mean,
I said on a previous show a couple of weeks ago that Sean Payton should have felt the same impact as Greg Williams. I mean, think about it. You're the coach. You're the person that the ownership says, look, we're going to pay you X amount of dollars because we trust you.
You have
the capability to go out there and lead my team, to run my business, because basically that's what the coach is doing. Outside the GM, he's basically running the business of the owner to make sure that his organization runs correctly. And for you to stand there with a blind eye, to cover it up and to lie is worse than the actual act itself.
If I'm correct, this has been like a 3-year ongoing thing, am I right?
It's been going on for a while. I mean, they went to the NFL. The NFL came to them and they lied about it. Sean Payton, Greg Williams, the general manager, you lied not only to your owner, but you lied to the NFL who was investigating this. I mean, how much? What's worse? What's worse besides what are you gonna do? Rob a player right there, or on the field, or say, look, we can't take this guy down because he's X, Y, he's strong. What are we gonna do? Drive a car on the field? Say, listen, do it by any means necessary, even if you have to drive a car onto the football field and run this guy over. Basically, I mean, someone could have been killed out there. I mean, going back to 2006 when Greg Williams was with the Washington Redskins, I don't know if anyone remembers that game when Peyton Manning, he had his neck snapped back and his helmet ripped off.
Yeah.
I've never seen Peyton Manning down like that. I mean, he was pointing to his neck, and actually Tony Dungy made some reference to that. He feels that that play right there might, of course, Peyton that
the injury.
The downslide of this redundancy. Nate, baseball, listen to this. I mean, Shoeless Joe Jackson, banned from baseball, knew nothing about this thing. Okay, gang, what we're going to do, of course, we always wind up with this. We're going to do mic on, lights off, so hang on a second. We're going to come back, get to this for maybe a good 20 minutes or so, talk about some sports in depth. Doc Sandy's Sports Net, Trust in God, Artifacts Hall of Fame. It is Resurrection Sunday. We're going to Resurrection Sunday, going to Micron, lights off. Larry Hardesty will take us out of with the lights on, and then, boom, he'll hit the switch. Now, I do more.
Moça do corpo dourado do sol de Ipanema.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth. with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day. Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. Now, I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, mic on, lights off. Dear Lord, thank you for Resurrection Sunday and your darling son Jesus. Amen. Gentlemen, we're going to do a good 15 minutes here, and then we're going to slide. And so we're going to get back to that part that we were talking about. So,
see,
we pick up.
Doc, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
The double.
Hold tight. Let me. Yeah. I want. We got to wrap this quick. Nate, looking at this, and then Dusty, yeah, you heard your singer. Is okay. Shooter Joe Jackson knows nothing about the scandal. I mean,
yeah.
I think he forced something in the World Series.
Yeah.
Him and the rest of those guys are banned for life.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Baseball, do you think in lieu of what has been presented before you, do you think maybe a lifetime ban should have been not only to the coach, but maybe some of these football players?
Well, yeah. What I mean, if you go and tear someone's ACL, is it, you know, the guy that gets injured might get a lifetime ban, you know, due to injury, basically, you know, and so, you know, they were trying to, you know, intentionally ban other players for life, you know, these coaches of the Saints because through injury. And now when it comes back to them, you know, I get this feeling they're acting like they're victims or something. They're not victims. You know, they.
Yeah, I'm remorseful. I'll do everything I can to
help
the league.
Once you get caught. Yeah, people are always remorseful when they get caught. And it's not just that. First, Sean Payton would be guilty enough if he knew. But he tried to cover it up, you know, by getting the ducks in the row, telling other coaches to get their stories straight, you know, for the next time the NFL comes. So there was a cover-up. And even if there weren't a cover-up, he'd be guilty. He's paid $7.5 million to know what's going on, and you're the coach. You're in the position of power, and just sitting by watching somebody else, you know, do something wrong and not doing it,
right,
you're still guilty. And just going back to baseball on a side note, they got the lifetime bans, and I know this just seems like you know, semantics, but they're lifetime bans. But you know, Shoeless Joe's now dead, you know, so his life is. After he's dead, shouldn't the lifetime ban be over? I mean, I always wondered that myself, but that's the side.
I don't think he should be banned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He could have cost somebody his life out there. I mean,
yeah.
not to jump from the NFL to college, but when you look at the actions of the former coach, the late...
Joe Paterno.
Yeah, I mean, he turns a blind eye to something, at least that it was reported, and I think it was really confirmed that these kids continue to be abused due to not only the lack of action on the Joe Paterno's part, and the reason why he's in the forefront is, you know, same reason with Michael Vick. It's the name. It's the name. If he were Joe Smo somewhere else, yeah, would there be some sort of outcry? Yes, but not when you have that stature of a position where you was more powerful than probably the board of directors, the president of the campus.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was like the king there. And you turn the blind eye to it, I agree with Penn State as well. He should have been fired.
Yeah.
He should have been. I mean, Sean Payton, he knew about it and he lied to the NFL commissioner. Now, for him to go appeal it, I guess that's just more of semantics on his part. But I don't see Roger Goodell overturning this situation, because when
But see, Wayne, let me ask you a question here.
Hold on, Dusty. Go ahead, Rooney.
I was going to say that what makes it so bad about that, and see the jurisdiction on it, that they not only had it, they had it, found out, they had been warned by the NFL that, look, we know this is going on. Cut it out now. Cut it out. We know it's going on. Cut it out. Stop it right now, right here. And the fact that after he's not, so you know the jig is up, okay? You know the jig is up. So now that you know the jig is up and you have already been forewarned, you are going to smack the NFL in the face even more by continuing to do that. And as if you said, hey, this doesn't matter to me, what you say, what you say, and stuff. So you add that in combination with the fact that, hey, you're going to smack me in the face twice after I was nice enough to tell you that we know what's going on. Stop it. Well, then you deserve whatever hard consequences that the commissioner deems necessary. I have absolutely no sympathy for you in this situation.
Well, you know, the point that I'm trying to stress here is this, and it rankles my fiber here continuously. First of all, we talk about Antonio Margarito with plaster Paris gloves who could have killed Shane Mosley or ended his career. Caught dead to rights. That day he was allowed to fight. Already the investigation was continuing. The pads were confiscated. The deputy commissioner had it in his hand. He was allowed. They already knew that their purses were being held, but the fight was allowed because of HBO consideration. And if Antonio won legally, well, the title would have been vacant, but it so happens that Shane Mosley knocked him out, justifiably so, and won the title. And even now, people are clamoring for Margarito to be to lose his license forever. He was given a one-day pass to fight Pacquiao. I suspect, I haven't found anything, I've researched, but I suspect he still doesn't have a license, and he got a license December 3rd, not a license, a permit to fight Miguel Cotto December 3rd at Madison Square Garden. As far as I'm concerned, he still doesn't have a license. Now, let me just jump up into the NFL. This is a brutal sport, second, like I said, with all due respect, to boxing. The man premeditated, look at the legal term, man, premeditated mayhem and possibly death on these ball players by these bounties, okay? And he was warned, and he continued. Now, Goodell, I think, failed in two things. The lifetime ban, he should have imposed it. Maybe he's a puppet of the owners. He tried to be as tough as he could with limitations, one. Number two, here's another fallacy. Sean Payton was allowed, and I don't know if that's the right term, allowed to reach out to one of his homeboys, Bill Parcells, and ask him to, in the interim, to coach his team while he's on suspension because he's coming back. I mean, the nerve, the brazenness of this individual. I mean, and what did Goodell do? He just turned a blind eye. If a commissioner is a commissioner, is a commissioner. And since when? No, we are going to select. There is a cadre of unemployed coaches. And like I told you guys before, about an hour ago, the one who ran the Indianapolis Colts, he's unemployed, but he's a damn good coach under Tony Dungy. Goodell could say, okay, John Doe, you're going to coach this team until and or if this guy comes back. That wasn't done. There's a lot of show and tell. There's a lot of pretense to say, oh, man, what a great commissioner. Look what he did. But he didn't do what he was supposed to do.
Let me talk
to somebody that
he does. I kind of
that's why
he
didn't do what he was supposed to do.
Number one, the commissioner is paid by the owners, so in essence, he works for them.
Well that's exactly what I just finished saying.
Yeah, the commissioner is paid by the owners, so in essence, no matter how much autonomy he has, he still works for them. You know, you work for the person that's paying you, so in this case, it's the owners. And number two, if you have the suspension, whether it's for how long, a year, 2 years, life, whatever, if they ask Parcells to come in and take over, and you ban them from doing that, you may be subject to legal action.
What legal action?
I'm not a lawyer. I don't know.
Commissioner is a commissioner. A commissioner is a commissioner. You don't turn a blind eye, or because you're hired, well, then you're nothing but a puppet then.
Well, but you're making 2 points here, Dusty, and Rooney is dovetailing on the point. I mean, you know, the guy is paid by the owners. You know, they may have said, they may have said, you kind of overstepped your bounds here, buddy. I'm saying they may have said that to him, and, you know, I don't really see a problem. I mean, the whole idea behind Parcells coming in supposedly is the idea of credibility. Now, I see what you're saying. You're saying, hey, I'm doing this all the way. I'm going to tell you who's going to come at the coach. I understand that. But, you know, you got the players' union. You got, you know, the owners. I mean, there's what you and Rooney say. There's a whole lot to that.
It's a fallacy. I mean, you're selling me the Brooklyn Bridge.
I have to take my hat off to him because he has been rough on this thing. He's not done. I mean, because, you know, he could have took a total blind eye to this whole thing. He could have said, hey, you know what I mean, we're investigating it, and he could have let this guy coach this year. He could say, you know, we're looking into this. So I got to take my hat off to him to the fact that he did do something. You know what I mean?
But I knew he would take a big stand, though, because I spoke to him the year, I think it was the year before last at the draft when Big Ben was the headlines in the papers in regards to, you know, talking and doing God knows what else with these young girls. He basically said, I said, I think he should have been suspended the whole season. He said if he does something else in that manner or to get himself in trouble, you just might get your wish. So this guy seems to be the real thing.
Well, you know,
but I also see what Dusty says, because if you look at the NBA, the New Orleans Hornets are owned by the NBA. So that's a conflict right there. How do you negotiate contracts when you're the league that owns the team?
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, but I give you two words. I'm coming to you guys live from Baltimore, Maryland at this point. I can't stay that much longer on the line, but I will give you these two words here. Sal Alossi. Does anyone recognize that name?
Sal Alossi?
Alossi.
No. Alossi.
He was the New York Jets. Strength and conditioning.
Yeah, the guy in the sidelines.
The tripper.
Okay. Yeah, he could have been. He could have easily ended Nolan Carroll's career.
Yeah,
that's why he was suspended indefinitely by the New York Jets team, and he hasn't had an NFL job since. I mean, he should have been banned. You could have broke that guy's leg into two.
Yeah, but you see, what my contention is, and I understand what you're saying, but my contention is that let's utilize two situations here. Joe Paterno was way aware what the heck was going on in Penn State. He cleaned his hands like Pontius Pilate, goes over to his boss and look, this is happening. That's as far as he went.
He cleaned his hands with dirty soap, Dusty.
Exactly. That's exactly. He says, I should have done more. But now you have Goodell, you know, saying, I'm going to do this. And then this guy, Peyton, selecting who's going to replace him.
I think that's the guy that he would like to do it because he's his mentor, he'd like him, and he figured that a guy like Parcells can bring in credibility and also people. Well, he still may say no. I mean, I'm saluting him for the fact that he did what he's done, what he's done, and he still may say no. I mean, we got to see. Let's the jury is not fully out on him, but I have to commend the stand he's had. He's taken no nonsense from New Orleans, and who knows? I mean, this may lead to a lifetime ban. I mean, this guy is coming in. You know, Fidel may say, you know, you got a lot of nerve coming here talking about, you know, clemency and you want an appeal. I mean, this may lead to him saying, you know what? Sayonara, buddy. I mean, you're going to come in here, and we caught you with the smoking gun. We got you on the film, and the blood test say you're the guy, and now you want to come up with some kind of innocence? Who knows? Let's just stay tuned. But with that, Gary, we're going to run here in a minute. I want everybody.
Okay.
Can I just say one thing real quick?
Yeah.
I have to leave.
Okay.
I just wanted to say happy Easter to the panel and to our listeners out there.
Thank you.
Also offer my condolences to the families of Gil Noble, who tragically passed away last Thursday, the pioneer in the broadcast industry for many decades, and also Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes, who has also passed away at the age of 93. So I would like to offer my condolences to both of those families. I want to just say you guys have a great holiday.
Hold on, C-Wings, live from Baltimore. Real quick, some thoughts on Resurrection Sunday.
It goes to show that, you know, God loved us, God loves us, and he will continue to love us and wake us up every day and bless us. And I just love the Lord. I love the Lord, and may everyone be blessed, such as I.
Amen. Okay,
all right,
thank
gentlemen,
you.
Have a wonderful night.
Okay.
Take care,
Rudy, thoughts on Resurrection Sunday, Easter Sunday?
Well, I do have to say, I think Easter is very eloquent. So my blessings to all of us, all of all those who are listening in, also those who aren't listening or doing whatever at the moment. My two best to them and their families, everyone you know listening, I want to have a very happy, a very healthy Resurrection Day, everyone and their families. And I wish you all nothing but the best. And of course, that includes our illustrious panel, your family. So I just thank you all, and I wish you all well.
Amen. Nate B. Baseball, thoughts on as we... Easter Resurrection Sunday?
Yeah, I think it's it's one of optimism. I think that's what Easter is about. It's like the Martin Luther King Jr. quote, the arc of the moral universe is long but bends towards justice. So that's what I think of, you know, optimistic and happy ending, you know, sort of thing.
And Dusty.
Well, you know, in reflection or resurrection, you know, it brings family together and makes us realize that resurrection is every day that God allows us to be together and spend time together. This is the same thing. There's an equal to that when people get together and celebrate Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is every day that you can pick up the phone or spend time with your relatives and say how much you love them and interchange and just... in general conversation. These days are symbolic of how fortunate we are and how blessed we are by the good Lord. And, you know, and we tend to sometimes take these things for granted and not realizing that these are days where we have to reflect and understand how fortunate we are and how blessed we are by the good Lord. And by him being a symbol of all the sacrifices he's made for us. And that's basically what I feel it is.
And we close out, and I think Dusty said a tremendous point. The blessings every day. The remembrance should be every day, not just one particular Sunday, not one particular week, one particular month. I think we have to continue to remember the little things that we so largely take for granted. And remember the large things that has granted us the ability to have the little things. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, on the Blake Rainbow Soul Sports in Depth is the show. We'll be back next week. The gang will all be here. We just want to simply say, dear Lord, we thank you. And can't say it enough. As they said, thank you for Resurrection Sunday. Gang, we're going to leave here. Dusty, tell everybody good night, and then Larry Hardy's going to say goodbye.
God bless everybody. Happy Easter. Remember, resurrection is every day. And take care. And with God's help, of course, we'll be back together again. But during the week, we're still here, so we keep in contact. God bless everybody.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake. We're never at Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports and Depth, the show. DocStanleySports.com, my Trust in God Hall of Fame. Take a look. We talked to WWF. As I said, we've got some WWF stuff in there. We're just closing. Going to close the day a little different. We're going to let Larry Hardesty close, and then we're going to come back and close out with Dear Lord by John Coltrane, and we'll see you next week, gang. Larry Hardesty, number one African American sportscast in the history of New York City radio. He'll close out the show, and then John Coltrane, who did his great album, A Love Supreme, will be our closing theme today as we remember Resurrection Sunday and the meaning of what it means to us as individuals and the world, giving all honor and praise to the one and only true God, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Larry, thank you.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Amen.